Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast.
What are the secrets of Zoe? We're going to be asking this question and a lot more on today's episode of Systematic Geekology. We are the Priests of the Geeks. I'm your host, Christian Ashley. As we're continuing on through our One Piece series, this time we'll be in the Zoe arc. And I say we because it's not just me. It's also my co-conspirator, the co-leader of the rebellion against Joshua Knoll and everything that he stands for, Elizabeth Pangalang and Clyde. How's it going, Pang?
Hello. It's going well. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, it's a good day. It's a good time to talk about some One Piece, you know. But before we actually head that way, why don't you go ahead and tell me what you've been geeking out on, Pang?
Gosh. Okay, it's on Crunchyroll. It's called Pass the Monster, My Lady. It's one of those cutesy, I know. It's one of those cutesy little romance animes. It's very fun. I suggest you go
watch
it.
Airing this season, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard it is kind of cutesy, so that sounds like fun. I finally finished the first book in the High Republic series, Light of the Jedi, that came out forever ago. I've tried multiple times to read it, and you know what? I finally said, shut up and just do it. I did it. It was okay. And now I can take that one off my list. And I know there's some people who are more big on it than I, but you know what? It's a fine introduction. I'll say that. It's not the favorite thing I've ever read, but it is what it is. So if you guys want to hear more of these conversations like this, you want to help us out, you can go down to the link in the description down below and hit that. And if you want to become an official supporter, you can head that way. We do have a free tier on the website that we use. So if you're interested in that, head that way. And we'll be mentioning some sponsors along the way as we go through this. So thank you very much for all you do. But you know what, Pang? It's time to get back into some One Piece. We're going to be in the Zoe arc. So why don't we go ahead and discuss the events of this arc? You ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. So your memory is as bad as mine. And that's why
I remember it, like, once we start talking about it, I'm going to be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this arc didn't capture my attention like previous ones did.
It's also fairly short. I mean, for a One Piece arc. This is 23 chapters, 29 episodes of the anime. So you can imagine how long those were stretched. But this is post-Dressrosa. The Straw Hats are on the way to regroup with everyone else. And we see that as they're doing their thing at Marine headquarters, Kizaru gets some news that one of the new warlords of the sea, Edward Weevil, is proclaiming that he is the son of Whitebeard. And he's massacred a fleet who was associated with Whitebeard. And, you know, his mother is trying to spread the same news that she used to be Whitebeard's lover. So therefore, he carries on the legacy of Whitebeard. And after hearing that Doflamingo just got beaten up by Luffy, he's going to go after him because he thinks that's a way in. Since Luffy did work, albeit very shortly, with Whitebeard, maybe he might know where Marco is at. So as that is happening, we see our crew end up at Zoe, which is a nation state on the back of a giant elephant that traverses through the seas. And this is when Kanjuro, one of the samurai accompanying them, mentions that this is the homeland of the Mink tribe. And they're supposed to be this animalistic group of people who aren't very big on humans. for reasons not known at this time. So they end up docking alongside the elephant leg, and they try and get up there and fail miserably until Kondro is kind of able to draw a very poor looking kind of dragon. And I think they name him Ryunosuke or something like that. And they go up and through some shenanigans get kind of mixed up together, not able to figure out what's going on. And Luffy gets hit by this monkey guy who is one of the minks. Yeah. I think that I'm remembering that correctly. And before that, he had kind of asked why Kinemon and Kanji wanted to go there. And they said that they were trying to meet up with their old pal, Raizo, who was a ninja as opposed to them being samurai. And that's when Luffy gets hit by the monkey, who turns out to be one of the mink tribe. I think his name is Barriette. And that's when they kind of panic and everyone kind of gets separated for a bit. And they end up on top of the elephant's back and they start exploring. And that's when they find this rabbit, anthropomorphic rabbit girl named Carrot, surprisingly enough, who mm-hmm. ends up kind of meeting up with them. And they see that there's another mink there who's more kind of a dog in appearance, and she's wearing Nami's clothes. So they kind of like freak out over that. They find out that Carrot was there looking for an intruder. They see that it's them, and they kind of clash with each other, fight a little bit, and then the dog mink kind of steps in and says, look, my name is Wanda and we're not here to fight you. And we just got attacked. So that's why we're on high alert. We got attacked by Jack, who was a member of the, was it Beast Pirates or something like that? And that's why we're very upset. So, all right, what do you remember for here?
I remember, yeah, they fought like dogs and cats. And I remember they got attacked by, was it Jack?
Yes.
Okay, so they get attacked by Jack. I'm not sure if that's, was that the one who originally attacked the dogs?
Yes.
And so he's looking for the ninja, and everyone's like, we don't know where he's at. And so did the Straw Hats, they defeated Jack, right? Or did Jack?
Well, that's part of what will happen in a bit. They fought the ones that were with them on the island, on Zoe. Help them fight back against Jack's forces. And that's where, Sanji was kind of helping them out. Caesar Clown was with them. Chopper was with them. Nami was with them. I can't remember who else was with them off the top of my head. And this is when they see that the island is kind of ruled at different times of the day and night between two different people. You got it. Yeah, I'm going to butcher this one. Inua Rashi and Neku Mamushi. So you got a dog and a cat, obviously. I had odds with one another. So Inu rules during the daytime, Neko at night. And that's when they were attacked. I think it was when Neko was in charge. And so since they weren't united, they got beaten up a lot. Jack then left Zoe behind, saying he's left a couple of his guys behind, just be like, look, I'm looking for Raizo. You're going to give him to me. And he was going to go and rescue Doflamingo, but the Straw Hats had already beaten by that point in time. So eventually he has to come back. Then, the mink tribe had been gassed by an invention of Caesar Clowns. And that's why they weren't, one of the reasons why they weren't at their peak physical capacity is because they're kind of weakened by that gas. And mm-hmm. I think that happened about 17 days before Luffy and the gang arrived. Then this is when we get, we learned that the pirates are also working with Big Mom, who we still haven't seen yet as far as like her capabilities and everything. And she's trying to get Sanji for something. And Caesar's like, look, I owe them money. I don't want nothing to do with this except, if we team up, we can go and kill her and them and we'll be saved. But Capone, one of the guys working with Big Mom, ends up shooting one of the underlings, like Peckoms, P-E-K-O-M-S. I can't remember how you say his name. Mm-hmm. And this is when we learn that Sanji is not just some guy. Sanji is the third son of the Vinsmoke family. And he's going to be marrying Pudding, who is one of Big Mom's kids. And they're... this is all unfolding. It's like, you got to come back with us. There's some friction between Sanji and the rest of the crew. And he just leaves saying, I'm not coming back. I'm going to have to deal with this. Don't come after me. And that's where we get to the present, mm-hmm. when they all work together against Jack, figuring out what's going on. We can learn a little bit more about the island. Kinemon and Kanjuro return. And we learn that Raizo is alive and that they were keeping him safe. And they had gotten beaten up and abused all this time for his sake, because they didn't want to give him up to the pirates. And also, they had, if I remember correctly, they had actually chained him up to prevent himself from exposing himself and being caught,
right,
because he didn't want them to suffer. Yeah. And we learn that that Raizo was working with people of the Kozuki family. And this is when we learn that Momonosuke is not actually Kinemon's son. He is, in fact, part of the Kozuki, Odin's family. And Odin used to be the leader of Wano, but now that is no more, has been killed. And Momonosuke is the rightful lord of the region of Wano. And they want to prop him back up as king, but they need allies for it. And Raizo was one of them. So they're allying with the Straw Hat crew as well as the Mink. So we create the Ninja Pirate Mink Samurai Alliance, which is a cool and stupid name at the same time. It just works.
Yeah, it was like very wordy. But we talked about what the city is on, right? Because I think that's one of the coolest things.
Yeah. Oh, on Back of the Elephant? Yes. Traveling through the ocean.
I thought we mentioned that. Apparently,
at some time, this elephant had committed a crime, and that's why it's cursed to wander around like this, but also unable to attack other people without being directed by others, which is what happens when Jack's pirates attack. And the elephant can't fight back because of that preconception that it has a rule, it can't do anything unless someone orders it. And that's when both Luffy and Momonosuke hear the elephant, whose name is Zunisha, in their heads, like, look, I need your help. I need you to be able to tell me what to do. Otherwise, they're going to get on me and kill everyone. So eventually Momonosuke gathers up the courage, speaks to Zunisha, and he just goes ham on him, kills a bunch of Jack's crew, more than likely. This is One Piece. We don't focus too much on that. Mm-hmm. And they are soundly defeated. Luffy reunites with his crew minus Sanji, and they have started to figure out, okay, he's turned his back on us. That's very un-Sanji like. What's going on? Well, we're going to go after him. So they create the Sanji retrieval team to then go after him, see what's going on with all that business before they even go to Wano. And that's when this arc kind of ends with the main story. We get other things like Vivi going out and searching the world. She's got questions she wants answered. See other people reacting to Doflamingo going down and Jack going down and a couple things like that. And Carrot has ended up joining the ship, but not a part of the crew. We'll get to that in a little bit. And to help them out with what's going on. We also see Kaido kind of dealing with some of the after effects of this. And that's kind of where we end. So is there anything I forgot? Anything you want to add?
No, not too much.
Okay.
Oh, hey guys, I really hate to interrupt, but my name's TJ, and I'm here to tell you about our new merch. We have incredible new stuff with Fourth Wall. We have just partnered with them as a new store. They have a lot more to offer, which means we have a lot more to offer. We can now offer you beautiful Comfort Colors t-shirts. They're so comfy. I wear mine all the time. And we've got it all now. Cups, hats, backpacks, pajamas. If you want your Systematic Geekology pajamas, you know where to go. My personal favorite is actually our Throne of Geeks shirt. It is Comfort Colors, you know, blue, black, green, red, orange. And the shirts are just so nice. And the shirt itself, we've got the Throne of Iron geeked out. Because, you know, that's our brand. We've got Mjolnir on there, the Buster Sword, Trident. Basically just the coolest weapons from our favorite properties are on the shirt instead of a bunch of normal boring swords from the boring series Game of Thrones. So check that out, and thank you.
Well, with that in mind, what were your initial thoughts when you read or watched this arc forever ago?
I don't know. Maybe it's because I really just don't like, maybe I'm racist towards like people or something like that. I usually don't vibe with like the other species of animal, but same thing if like there was like an alien population, I just don't vibe with that either. So I was not my favorite arc.
Aang says humans first.
Right. And even then, like, you know, Sanji swooning over Carrot, I'm like, let's stay in on, you know.
Yeah, I will say I'm more, when it comes to the anthropomorphic animals, I'm more on the side of those when you have like human-like, for the most part, except for some animal characteristics, like maybe like dog ears or a cat tail or something like that. But not going full furry, shall we say. Not really big on that. So I'm with you there.
Right, right, right. Yeah, not, if you're a furry listening, no hate towards you. I just, you know, I felt the same way growing up with people with mascots and like those like mascots. Not the biggest fan either. I have a picture of me posing with a taco, and you don't realize it at a time, but like he's definitely putting hands where he's not supposed to put hands. I'm like, ever since then, I'm kind of like, oh, you know, no. I'm going to just avoid. And it could have been completely innocent.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I'm going to just avoid all stuff like that. Okay. So, yeah.
You know what? That's fair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In regards to this arc, this is one of those, I think I stopped watching the anime around here. Because I was just getting annoyed just with the how, I mean, props to them for being able to stretch one chapter into a long episode after like 5 minutes of exposition of what happened the last time in flashback. And then maybe 16 to 17 minutes of actual story with added scenes in because, you know, they have to do it because that's what the schedule One Piece is on. Not their fault. I stopped caring about the anime at this point in time. And this arc not being the greatest ever didn't really help either. Mm-hmm. So I remember my initial reaction being like, okay, this is some fun world building. I like that we're getting more about our samurai. We're learning that about this Wano place. And oh, I want to know more about Sanji now because he's kind of been this, he's been a mystery, but he's not been like, no one's been actively asking the question, who is Sanji in the series, pretty much. And now I'm asking that question. It's like, okay, yeah, I like this. And this leads into what I would say is a better arc. But yeah, it's fine. Very forgettable, certain parts of it. Like, you see how we were struggling to remember some things. But yeah, I think that's where I stand. Anything else you want to add?
I liked when Luffy and Chapu go neen to the ninja. They were so enamored by him.
I do love how equally childish they both are. Like, you would expect it more. I mean, they're not that terribly far away in age, considering everything. But, I mean, it's nice to have two children. One of whom is allegedly supposed to be an adult doing things together and just, like, reacting to the weirdness around them. And it's cool. What do kids do when they see a ninja or a samurai? Oh, my gosh, that's cool. Same way they see, like, a soldier or a Viking or what have you. That's what kids do. Yeah, I'm with you there. All right. So in this very short arc, Pang, do you have a favorite moment? And why would you say that it's your favorite in this arc?
Favorite moment besides the nin-nin. I mean, I guess it was really cool when Raizo was trying to sacrifice himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there's a huge nobility to something like that. I mean, because he knows it's not going to end well for him. And especially when we learn more about Wano and how that's being handled, like he's not going to end up alive if he gives himself up. And yet at the same time, he can't bear the suffering of these people. So they have to like put him in a spot where he can't escape and can't reveal himself because they know what's going to happen to him. So you can see both sides of like, why would he want to give himself up? Why would they want to keep him safe? Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Well, and that, and then, I don't think we mentioned it, but like one of Zoo, whatever it's called, there is a pony glyph.
Yes.
And so Robin was geeking out over that. So that's always a fun time because you don't see Robin break her cool character, but she facade, broke that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's also there we learned, you triggered a memory, that the Odin family knows something of how they were made. And I think Zuki Odin was the last one who was capable of doing that, something like that. And that kind of gives Robin more of an instinct of that. Like, well, we definitely needed to go to Wano. You know, we were already going to go that way at some point, but my gal needs to figure out those poneglyphs and what better place to go than there. So yeah, that's a good one too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm actually going to say the moment when Zunisha, how the heck you pronounce it? Yeah, we got all over the place with these names. It makes contact with Luffy and Momonosuke, and you kind of realize that's because of their haki and their kind of how tied they are to the world around them. And Momonosuke actually being the one to break through instead of our main character, I appreciate it because it made me look at Momonosuke in a new light. Like before, he was just this kid who was tagging along and he's being protected. He doesn't really get, he's kind of a coward. And, you know, he's also fighting people against who are way bigger than him. So I can't really be that mad at him. But to give him this moment of how he can contribute, and that's the decisive way of ending this battle against a fleet that's trying to climb up this giant elephant, to give the elephant a way to defend itself since it can't do it anymore based on whatever it did 1,000 years ago, which I don't think it's been revealed. I think it's great for him, and it's great for Luffy too, in that he's growing in his training, whether he realizes it or not. Other people around them didn't hear the voice. It was just the two of them, if I'm remembering correctly. And it's a nice moment for them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So which character stood out the most to you in this arc that has previously appeared before this arc? So not any, no new characters, someone who came before.
Stood out to me. Let me think. I mean, I did talk about how Robin broke her composure, but also Nami was like super attached to the mink. So that was kind of weird. Usually she's like, I'm all for myself. Let's rob this place and leave. But she was like super empathetic with the minks and caring about their suffering. So that was nice. We need people like Nami, because I'm not always the most empathetic people when it comes to the obvious mink.
Well, it shows some growth in her compared to where we meet her at the start of the series. Nami of, you know, the first couple chapters definitely wouldn't have done this, but the Nami who's gone through this with her crew and has gained appreciation for them and an appreciation for others, sees the needs of these people and denies herself. And that's really good to have in a character. I mean, she's still Nami, don't get me wrong, but it's a changed Nami, one who makes sure that, because eventually they do cure them to an extent and make them able to fight again and protect themselves. But she stood by them for days instead of just leaving the first chance she got, like she would have originally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, it was fun seeing Chopper kind of feel at home with some of the people, you know, because Chopper's been like the in-between for so long. So I'm like, he found his other half, I guess.
Well, officially on the bounty posters, he's still just their pet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't give him credit, and that's why his bounty is so low. And it's just, no doubt, just infuriating him. But yeah, you're right. Getting to interact, you know, with a species that looks more similar to him in some respects. Yeah, that's a good opportunity for him. I'm going to say, for me, actually, Sanji was mine for this arc, because I really appreciate it, because he's still Sanji. He's still protecting people. You know, he's still his gruff self. He'll talk smack to other people, but we see something change. And when information is revealed about himself, he kind of does this 180 of sorts and just leaves. And like, you know, there's a reason why. He doesn't explain himself that much, but, and obviously we know because we've, you know, read ahead why he does what he does. But there's something that's very compelling, because I didn't stop to think, oh, who is this guy? I just accepted the backstory at the very beginning, where he was just this kid. He was with, Zeph, and, you know, what happened between the two of them, and say, oh, well, that he just started somewhere. Well, obviously he had parents, so he had to come from somewhere. And now we get a little bit more, and he is now this important figure who's not the top son, but he's in the running there, and he's going to be marrying into the Big Mom Pirates. We're finally going to get a confrontation with him, and he's leaving his own crew behind to do it. Why would he do that? And so that leaves me some compelling questions to ask, and I appreciate where they go with that.
Yeah. Look at you giving Sanji some love.
Is it this arc or the next arc where, I think it's the next arc, where they mention that his bounty is always said alive instead of dead or alive?
I think it's the next. They haven't realized.
Yeah. That was a huge moment of like, oh, I never noticed that. I think I kind of filled in the blank and just assumed dead or alive was there, but it's always been alive. And we learned later on there, so not to spoil that. Yeah. All right.
Hello there, listener. This is Evan Garcia, and I just wanted to jump in here to remind you and to let you know of our Facebook groups and our Discord server. These are great communities where you can post and share memes and talk with the hosts, and we have votes and some polls for future episode topics and fun interactions with our hosts. So just wanted to remind you that we are focused on community with you listeners, and we love each and every one of you guys listening. Thank you guys.
So those are characters previously introduced. What do you say about new ones? There's not that many, but is anyone out there kind of like screaming at you? Yeah.
I mean, I'm a dog person, so I'm going to say the dog leader.
So Wanda?
Yeah, and the ninja. No, no, Wanda's not the dog leader. Doggo.
Oh, you mean, goodness gracious, Inu, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
The struggle between the two of them was fun. It's seen their conflict, but also recognizing, you know, they're better when they work together. You know, it's a classic shonen, you know, kind of conflict there. But you know what? It works. That's a solid choice. I'm going to go with Raizo. As discussed before, like the idea of this ninja who is trying to help his country, but at the same time, he's stuck in a position where if he gives himself up, the people will be, you know, not under the threat of being harmed. And at the same time, they're willing to do it, but you don't want to see him go through it. So you're going to deny yourself and do something ultimately that would be stupid and giving yourself up. I get the nobility behind that sentiment a lot. And I really appreciate it because it makes him more of like, he'd be a lot more callous if he just said, well, they're just doing what they were supposed to be doing. They're supposed to protect me. It's like, no, that they are doing what they're supposed to be doing, but he knows the cost of it. And that really hurts him. So I can appreciate it when a character can see beyond themselves and go, man, they're really sacrificing a lot just to make sure that I'm okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So Jack is our main villain here. What do you think about him? Is he one of the best One Piece has to offer? Is one of the worst? Somewhere in between? Where do you land on Jack?
I mean, I like that he wasn't so flashy coming from like Doflamingo. You're kind of like, you know what I mean? He was just so dang flashy. Fine. I mean, he was just more like a brute villain, if you will. Just to follow orders and doesn't really ask questions. I don't think we got a backstory from him. You know, it's not like we did a flashback and learned his tragic tale.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't think so either, which I appreciate. Let a villain be a villain. You know what I mean? I don't need to sympathize with all these villains.
Yeah, do it when it's appropriate, but not everyone needs to have
that. Right. Not everyone needs a freaking backstory. We need some bad guys, right?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's kind of the definition of middle of the road villain for me. It's like he serves his purpose. He is generic bad guy who is causing problems because he works for other bad guy and wants bad guy to get his way. So he does bad things to good people and he gets what's coming to him at the end. No, it's fine. He's not the deepest One Piece villain out there, but he serves the role that he's meant to play at this point in the goodness gracious story. That's the word I'm looking for. All right. So one of the good things about One Piece, I think, is just how fantastical it gets at times. Like you start off all the way back, you know, this boy with rubber powers and going through the sea from island to island, but it grows and like you learn more about devil fruits and the different races that are on this world, like the power system of Haki and all that. So like, what do we like about that? I know it's kind of a general question for all of these things, but like, what do you like about the fantastical part of One Piece? It makes you go, yeah, I really appreciate Oda put that in there.
Yeah, I mean, I do appreciate because it seems like each island is its own nationality, right? So that's really fun because that's literally, if we look at all the countries around, that's what we are. And even like the giants, we have some like nationalities that are like taller, you know, the Samoans and stuff like that. But man, I just can't get down because I think down to interspecies, you know what I mean? Like maybe if like there was aliens already and like we were in that world of different species, you know what I mean, not different cultures. So when it went from different cultures now what each species, I'm kind of like, that's kind of weird, but it does well in showing, you know, the look down upon, mistreat them, and so still has really great
I think it helps that we've already had like Fishman introduced way right. early on. We get like mermaids.
And for some reason, Fishman was fine, but I don't know.
But
because I guess it's the ocean and stuff like that.
Because they look more animalistic. That's when right. it kind of goes.
Because nah. I was just like mutated, like Atlantis. But yeah, that's I forgot about. I guess I'm just like racist to people. I guess I should repent before that if I feel convicted.
Well, you know what? If they were real, I think you would have to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the first step is acknowledging. So I'm glad you're there.
Thank you. I mean, please don't come to me in a furry costume.
Yeah, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm with you there. Yeah. One thing that makes One Piece different from, you know, other shonen manga and just stories in general is it embraces the fantastical. And there are other series that do that out there. I'm not saying they don't. But what it does is like, okay, here's this wacky concept. We've got this guy who has rubber powers. And that's one thing Oda made him the way he did, because he always wanted there to be something funny, even if the series got darker. So there'd always be a guy with these rubber band powers going around punching people in the face and acting goofy. But that's also augmented by different other devil fruits out there. We show how their powers work compared to Luffy's. And then you get into the haki system and showing, here's how this works. Here's how it can also be countered by someone with the devil fruit, and how someone with the devil fruit could be countered with haki. And I appreciate someone who puts the work into something like that. And yeah, the different species too, I think it adds to the depth of the world, because you could just have a generic everyone be human series, and there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But I think what Oda does here is he puts other species out there as, okay, how do we as humans relate to them? If these actually existed, what would we do? You know, because minks, a little more superior strength-wise, survivability compared to a human, and yet humans outnumber them and are typically going to be the ones who take devil fruits and stuff like that and be in charge. So there's some friction there, like the fishmen too. We get into giants when we get to the giants. But I like how he brings these fantastical elements in there. And yeah, it's not everything's going to work for everyone, but it works for me a lot, because it helps build up a world and makes it even more magical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, I mean, we'll learn about their special technique a little later, but they do have power.
All right. So, we did kind of focus on this. I don't know if we have anything else to add. Do you have anything else to add on the idea of the loyalty shown by the minks and Raizo towards each other?
No, I mean, it's just crazy how, like, even through them, one being a ninja, human, one being, like, and they notoriously in the past don't like each other, they went across cultures, across races, and still kept that bond despite everything. That, you know, gotta respect that.
Yeah, second that. Because I think Oda is trying to say something here, you know, in the midst of all this craziness of like, look, if you really love other people, you're willing to do things that brings harm to you just so they're safe. And he's not saying like, be stupid about it. He's not saying just be lie down and just accept being, you know, have your head chopped off or whatever. But there's something to be said about someone who doesn't give up someone else, and someone who would give up themselves to protect other people. But I don't know if I have anything else to add beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the Sanji reveal. We talked a little bit about it, but what else do you want to say on that in regards, you know, as he's your boy? I want to hear, what are your reactions to that?
I mean, it's okay. Maybe because I'm, you know, I've always liked Sanji, the culinary thing, but like, I really enjoyed learning about his backstory. You know, because we thought think about it, not many people get two backstories.
Yeah.
We already got his backstory of like the chef being stranded and how he came, you know, to where he was with the restaurant. But then we get a whole nother backstory. And you're like, what? Sanji's like an onion. He has hair. You guys got that reference?
There you go.
But I mean, like, you see he had a toxic family, but wasn't any toxic. The Ben Smoke family, which is like, created weapons and like are big political figures, and so they are very well known. And so for him to come from a very well known family, but no one knows about him, says volumes of how his childhood could have been.
I really appreciate this, because what this does is it complicates the story, not in like a bad way, but in the fact that you were heading one way, you wanted to get this objective done, but then something came up and complicated things where you have to refocus, you have to wing it, and plan against something you weren't prepared for, because no one in the crew thought this was a thing. Not even like Robin, the smartest person there, had any inclination, if I'm remembering correctly, of Sanji being anything else than other what he said he was. And now they learn that he's this noble of sorts, high ranking family. And now he's getting married into the Big Mom Pirates, who are people they've been working up to eventually fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, that's great. I mean, as a reader, like, this is something, like I said, I appreciate from this arc, is going, okay, that's a complication that makes it to where they don't get what they want, but I can see where they're going to fix that. I can see where they're going to learn more. Why would Sanji leave that family? Why would he want to marry this girl he's never met? Okay, compared to all the other women that he's attempted to be with, why would he just say, okay, I'm done with flirting, it's time to get serious? Or is he thinking that way? So those questions lead me with, okay, I got to find the answers, which does hype me up for the next arc. Which, speaking of, I mean, we are drawn into a conflict with the Big Mom Pirates now. Like, it was going to be a thing anyways, but now that complication has arisen where Sanji is more than likely going to be part of their numbers now that he's marrying into the family. So without actually saying what happens in the next arc, beyond what we've already said and spoiled, what do you think? What were your expectations when you were reading this for what would have happened next?
My expectation would be Sanji was just trying to save the crew, and I would think he would have a plan to escape or to kind of put someone in their place. And then come back to the Straw Hat. Okay. That would be my expectation if I was just watching it the first time.
Did you have any ideas what you thought, like, what his family might be like or anything?
I knew they must have been bad if he ran away to do the lifestyle he chose in the book.
Yeah, I was more of the same. It's seeing him, knowing Sanji as we do, yeah, this was a whole shock to our systems learning all this new information about him, sure. But it didn't sit with me like, no, he's not doing this because he wants to. He's doing this because he wants to keep the crew safe. He wants to make sure they don't follow him. And he actually means it when he says that, because it would make things worse for them, make things harder. And, you know, he loves them and he doesn't want them to go through any of the things they would have to do if they confronted one of the biggest pirates out in the sea. And then beyond that, his family, who are doing these atrocities and causing all these terrible things too. So yeah. And in learning about who his family was, I kind of figured, I thought, okay, they're all going to just be bad. And some of that is proven right. Others are not. And we'll see that when we get there. But this was a good, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not starting point, a good shift.
It's a good segue.
Thank you. Into what the next arc would be, like what I want to see out of it, what we want to see out of it, what could possibly happen. It's always good to be having your readers ask questions that you know are going to be answered versus just throwing out questions without actually ever giving a satisfying answer. And yeah, Oda has asked many, many questions over the 1,000+ chapters we've been here, but we know he has a proven track record of answering questions. So I want to see what's next.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Peng, do you have anything else you'd like to add before we start wrapping things up today?
No, nothing to add. I am just excited for everyone to learn the next arc.
Okay.
Somehow some crazy person has just been following just what we've been saying and have not been watching One Piece. Can't wait to tell you what happens next.
You know, that does astonish me because it's not like we cover everything. And so we're throwing out all these proper nouns and stuff. It's like, I have no context for that. Like, even people, if they've just watched the Netflix show, it's like, well, we're way beyond that.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
You know, if that's you, let us know on Facebook. Honestly, or somewhere.
We want to mail you an award.
It's like Discord, whatever. Mail
you an award as a thank you and an apology that you are getting your One Piece experience like this.
Because, you know, and I listen to other, you know, episodes we do and I'm not on them. And it's something I've never watched or read or whatever. And like, I get lost in the weeds sometimes. It's like, I don't know what that means. So I can't imagine covering a story that's 1,000+ chapters long,
right?
And we haven't even gotten to chapter 1,000 yet. But you know what? You keep on keeping on if you're doing that. So, Peng, out of 10, what are you rating this arc?
I'm gonna say a 5.
5. You know, I think that's fair. I'm giving it a 6.5 because the 6.5 is more for how it ends than the beginning and middle. But there's enough happening here to be interesting. We learn a little more about the world. We get some great character interactions, and then future character interactions will happen because of this. So I'll give it a 6.5. Yeah, and 5 is not a bad one either because it's not the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it literally only Sanji's backstory and then them going mean all the time is what made it a 5. Nothing else. Like, it could have gone higher, but.
All right. Well, do you have a recommendation for the audience to try out?
No, I'm trying to think. I guess watch past the monster meat. I am rewatching because I needed something fluffy, not fluffy, but something I one to watch, but it's been a while, was Haku. Is that how you say it? The volleyball anime?
Haku.
Yeah. I don't know why. I put that on the other day, and I was like, I forgot how much I like this. So maybe if you haven't watched it, go do it. I just wanted something in the background while I cook, something I didn't have to pay attention to. Fantastic.
I'm also choosing an anime. Fortunately, one that never really got a proper ending anime-wise, but the manga has ended. Kenichi, the Mightiest Disciple. It's about a kid who's not the greatest ever at anything. He kind of gets beaten up a lot at school. Then he joins this dojo with, like, the greatest martial artists of all time who do all these insane things to get him up to snuff. And it's really fun seeing him grow, the little love interest he has that's also a part of the dojo. And just some really good fights there, too. So that's our recommendation. So I'd like to shout out some supporters real quick. Thank you to Russell Gentry, Justin Vaughn, Annette Noel, and Jeannie Mattingly. You guys are the best. But remember. Oh, sorry. Remember, we're going to be doing a bonus question that I forgot to mention earlier because I'm so very good at what I do. And that bonus question is, now we have Carrot introduced here. And we're going to ask ourselves, should she have become a Straw Hat? So if that's something that interests you, among the other bonus questions that we do, the other episodes we do that only our supporters can find, head that way. Once again, we do have a free tier on Fourth Wall, as well as many other things there. So check it out. But after that, remember, we all are chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Hey friends, it's your pal Will Rose here, and let me break the fourth wall a moment and look directly at you through the camera or speak directly to you in your earbuds. Yep, I'm talking to you, Susie. You too, Chad. You can now support Systematic Geekology on Fourth Wall. That's a website. You'll find all of our episodes, incredible merch like shirts and hoodies and mugs. Chad, I would love to see you in one of those shirts out in the wild.
You get bonus episodes. We answer bonus questions. We have special shout outs. We have certain episodes that you pick. So you help us create and curate the content that we put out for the world to hear. You even get free merch.
And you can support the show at different levels. You could join at the free level. Yep, we love free members, free support. Join it. Or you could become a sidekick for as little as $5 a month. You could join the elves and dwarves for $10 a month. You could become a wizard for $15 a month, or you could go to divinity school and become a cleric for $20 a month. And that's way cheaper than going to seminary, believe me. Or at $25 a month, you could become a superhero. And let me just say, we love all of our listeners, whether you support us at the free level or the superhero level. We love you. We love geeking out with you. Like, support, share the show. Love you.
Hello, Systematic Geekology listeners. This is Kevin here. Just want to give a brief ad for some of the other podcasts in our Anazal podcast network. First of all, off is Let Nothing Move You by Christian Ashley, in which Christian goes through the Bible one chapter at a time and gives his thoughts there. There is also the Bible After Hours, which is a more progressive take on the Bible that tries to challenge the status quo with satire and looks at theology. The host uses the pseudonym, the Foulmouth Preacher. And as a bonus, Joshua Noel does the voices for this one. So definitely check that one out. And also, and we'll laugh about that later, is the newest podcast that our own Will Rose is starting, where he will interview friends about a story they had that wasn't funny at the time, but that they laugh about now. So definitely check out these shows and subscribe to us wherever you get your pods. Thank you very much.